This is Solve It for Kids.
Hey, 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 my curious friends, how are you? So great to see you. You look so bright and inquisitive and smart. My name's Jet Li, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. Please welcome to the show my partner in exploration, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson.
Hello, Ben.
Jennifer, it is a wonderful day here in beautiful Eadville, a great day to discover new things.
Oh, we have some really exciting things to discover today. Some animals that maybe people might be a little leery of in the beginning, but are amazing once you get to know them.
I can't wait. So should I spin the wheel right now?
Oh, hold on. We have two new Solverton guests, team members to welcome. So let's give a big Solverton Kids welcome to Prue and Amir. Welcome to the team.
Hey, Amir. Welcome. Part of the Solverton team. And to do that, I Prue and Amir, they got their parents to go to,
solveitforkids.com on our website and click on join the team. It'll take you to our Patreon page and you can sign up to become a member and get some special behind the scenes type information. Secrets.
Cool. All right, time to spin the wheel.
How can kids help bats?
You were talking about bats, and yep. We're going to talk today about how kids can help bats. This is so cool.
Right, and bats are actually amazing creatures, and we have our special guest today, Dr. Kristen Lear, who is a National Geographic Explorer and bat scientist, and she's going to talk to us all about the cool things she does with bats.
Hey, Dr. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to, talk about what we can do for bats, because I think there's a lot all of us can do to help bats.
Right. And, you know, one thing I want to talk about is how important they are to the whole ecosystem and environment, because most of us go, oh, my God, it's a bat. Ah! But really, bats are really important. So the question you're going to solve today, or I should say the problem you're going to solve, is how can kids help bats? But perhaps we should start with, why are bats useful to us?
Yeah, that's a great question. So bats are really, I think bats are superheroes. So bats have three main superpowers, which I think are really cool. The first one is that they have insect pest control. So they help eat lots and lots of insects, like mosquitoes, things that eat our crops and our gardens. So, you know, we don't like having mosquitoes around. So if you want to help get rid of mosquitoes and those other pesky insects, have bats around is a great way to do that. So that's one superpower. Another superpower is pollination. So just like butterflies, hummingbirds, moths, bats also pollinate flowers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so some of our favorite things are pollinated by bats. So things like bananas, mangoes, chocolate. Anyone like, I love chocolate, so I'm a huge sweet tooth. Bats pollinate these plants. So without bats, we wouldn't have bananas or chocolate or mangoes or avocados, all these things.
Oh my gosh, no guacamole? Like, no.
Yeah, exactly, no guacamole.
We have to have guacamole, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, that's their second superpower. And then their third superpower is seed dispersal. So some bats around the world eat fruit. And when they eat the fruit, they kind of squeeze the juice out. And then they spit out the rest of the fruit, or they poop it out. And what's in the rest of that fruit? The seeds.
Wow.
And then those seeds grow into new plants. So bats actually help plant new trees in places like tropical rainforests where we're cutting down trees, and so bats actually help replant them.
Wow.
So without bats, we wouldn't have tropical rainforests. We wouldn't have chocolate. We would have a lot more mosquitoes. So it's really important to have bats around.
That is really cool. I was in the rainforest down in Costa Rica, and we went by this banana plantation that had to have been 300 acres. It just went on and on and on. And I imagine now that I'm knowing that they pollinate banana plants, there must have been a bazillion bats living in that area.
Yeah, there could have been. And they're all over. And that's the cool thing, is because bats are on every continent except Antarctica. So you can literally find them everywhere, eating insects and, you know, pollinating plants. So yeah, they're great to have around. They're super cool, I think.
You were telling me earlier that you did something as a kid that really helped out. And a lot of times kids sit back and they're going, I'm just a kid, I can't do anything. But you did something as a kid that was really helpful. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I got my start as a bat conservation person in sixth grade. I was a Girl Scout growing up. I still am. I'm a lifetime member of Girl Scouts. And when I was doing my Silver Award project in sixth grade, I loved animals, and I had always wanted to help animals. And so when I was thinking about a project to do for my Silver Award, I was thinking, how can I help animals? And I was reading a lot about different types of animals, and I read about bats. And I read that bats are under threat. A lot of them are endangered, which means they could go extinct soon. And a lot of this is because they're losing their habitat or where they live. You know, we cut down trees or we clear areas where the bats are, so they don't really have places to live anymore. And so I was thinking, how can I help solve that problem and help bats? And that's when I decided for my project to build bat houses and put them up in a local park where I grew up in Ohio. And yeah, it was definitely a learning experience. My first time ever building anything like that, you know, out of wood. You know, they're made out of wood, and you use a hammer and some power tools to put them together. And it was super fun. I was nervous because I had never used power tools before, but it was a great learning experience. And I'll tell you a little how it went in a second. But
that's
So bats live normally in trees, like particular kinds of trees?
Yeah, so there's different types of bats. So when we say bats, there's actually over 1,400 different species or types of bats all around the world. Yeah. So they all have different behaviors. Some live in trees, like in, you know, tree hollows. Others live in caves. Some live under or in rocks or like in cliff faces. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different places they can roost or sleep. But bat houses are basically like they're made from wood, and they kind of look like a natural tree cavity where the bats can go and squeeze in and sleep during the day. But yeah, so that's what I was trying to do, is how can we build a bat house for the bats? And I had to read a lot. You know, I had to figure out how to build these houses, and luckily found some information online about how to build them, and got to put them together. Like I said, I was a little nervous, you know, building for the first time. I had never done anything like that. But I had a lot of help from my mom, who was my troop leader. My dad and grandpa helped. And yeah, we put them up in a park in Ohio. And unfortunately, it didn't quite go so well.
Uh-oh, I sense an epic failure coming up here.
Yes, there was an epic failure. So I went back after we put them up. We went back to check them a few weeks later to see if there are any bats in the houses. And unfortunately, somebody had come and vandalized and torn down my bat houses.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and you can imagine, I was 12 years old, and this was like my project. We had built four different houses, and yeah, and they were all torn down. So I was really bummed about that.
So what does a bat house look like? I mean, the only thing I can imagine is a birdhouse. Is it anything similar to like what you would build a birdhouse?
Similar. So actually, that's one of my other kind of failures, is that when I was building them, this was back before we knew a lot about what bats needed in a bat house. And so the actual ones that I built weren't the best type of bat house. The ones that I built were kind of round, like a birdhouse, but they have slats in the middle inside that the bats can go into and sleep. But bats tend to prefer bigger bat houses. And mine were pretty small. So even if somebody hadn't have vandalized them, I don't know if any bats would have moved in. And we also mounted them or put them up on trees, which the bats don't tend to like the tree-mounted bat houses as well as ones that are on poles or like the side of a building. But I didn't know that at the time. But I have since learned from that. And I build bat houses now as part of what I do as a bat conservationist. So I've had a chance to learn from my mistakes and do better.
I'm really psyched because that for a lot of kids going out and find, because I know myself, I work really hard at something and then I thought, oh, I'm really proud I did this. And then something happened and it failed. And then I get discouraged and I say, well, I ain't going to try that again. But you had the opposite reaction. You said, no, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do it better.
Yeah, I didn't actually go back until when I was in college. So that was my Silver Award project was when I was 12, but I still loved bats. I had learned a lot about them through my project, and I fell in love with bats as a kid. So when I was in college, I actually had the chance to do a bat research project during the summer and actually help a bat biologist do her research. And this was my first time actually getting to catch bats. We got to catch them, chase them around, figure out where they're roosting, where they're sleeping during the day, what they're eating. And this was when I fell in love with working with bats as a career. And as part of that project in college, I actually did another bat house project. And this time, instead of building 4 bat houses, I built 18 different bat houses.
Wow.
So it was a lot bigger scale, had two different types of bat houses, and these were like pretty big bat houses. And this time when I put them up, within like 2 weeks, one of them already had a colony of bats in it. And I was super excited.
How big is the colony?
Well, so these bat houses that I was building can hold like 200 to 300 bats.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so they can hold a lot. And there
Where
were
did you put them though?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I was in Texas doing this work and we were actually working with pecan farmers. So farmers that grow pecan trees, to sell pecans to the stores.
Right.
And they wanted to have bats around because the bats were eating the pecan nut case bearer moth, which is a moth that eats pecans. So we wanted to put these bat houses up on their farms for them to get the pest control services of the bats. So that's what we did. And there were a couple hundred bats in my bat houses. And the coolest part was one of the bat houses was used as a maternity colony, which means the mother bats had given birth to their pups in there and were using it as like a nursery. And to me, that was, I actually cried when I saw that. I was so excited.
Now, did they put up little mobiles in the nursery for the little baby bats to play with?
They could. They should. They should.
Now, you're talking about one of the bat houses having a couple of hundred bats in them. How big is that bat house?
Yeah, so these bat houses, I built two different kinds in college. But the one kind of standard bat house that you'll see like on the internet for sale, they're about like 2 to 3 feet wide by 2 to 3 feet wide. So they're not that big, but they're bigger than the ones that I had built in sixth grade. Because basically the bigger the bat house, the more room the bats have to move around as the temperature changes inside the house. So just like, if you have in your house or your apartment, you have some rooms that are colder or warmer than other rooms, right? And so you might prefer the cold room. And so that having a bigger house lets them move around as they need during the day. The other one I was building was a rocket box bat house, which looks like a rocket. It's like 4 feet tall and it has like a pointed roof. And it's like a cylinder. It's really cool. And the bats, they really liked that one. It looks kind of like a tree. So they love that one.
Wow. That's so cool. I'm, you know, just as you were talking about building this house and all of a sudden there's 200 creatures living in the house that you built, and then the moms had their babies in there. That is so cool.
Yeah, that was my pride and joy, those bat houses. And actually the coolest thing was, besides the mom bats, I actually went back to visit those bat houses in Texas last summer. So it was like almost 10 years, 8 to 10 years after these bat houses had been put up, and there were still bats in the houses. That's so awesome. They were still using them, which made me really happy.
Wow.
Well, and I want to talk about, so the fact that these farmers were using natural things, as in the bats, to naturally control the insect population problem they were having. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's one of the cool things about them, the bats. When they eat all those pest insects, the farmers actually have to spray fewer pesticides on their crops to protect them.
Which, of course, is better for the whole earth.
Yeah, it's better for the environment, but also it saves the farmer money. You know, they're not having to use all those chemicals. So they save money by having bats around, which I think is super cool. And we can do that, too, in our own gardens. You know, if you have a vegetable garden or flowers in your yard, there might be some moths or beetles that are going to eat your plants. So if you have bats around that are going to eat those moths and beetles, you can help protect your garden too.
See, that's what I would like to do. We live in Florida, and down here, unfortunately, we spray insecticides all over our grass to keep it green, which drives me bananas. I don't like that.
Oh, no, go what so, you were gonna say drives you batty. Go ahead. Crystal, Dr. Crystal,
I was considering, but then I said no. But, you know, to me, I'm like you. Like, I mean, I grew up in Central Illinois. In Central Illinois, the grass was what it was. And to me, it's way more natural to have, to just, you know, have gardens like that and have insects that, you know, control the gardens and all this kind of stuff.
Yep.
I know that snakes do. They helped keep things out too. So I don't remember what, but I know that they're very, everybody has their own, every animal has its purpose kind of thing. Although I'm not sure about the mosquitoes. We could do with less of the mosquitoes.
I mean, the mosquitoes are food for bats. So, you know, like that.
Well, there you go.
Provides a meal to the bats, I guess.
That's their job.
Exactly. Yeah. They're part of the ecosystem too. We just don't want too many of them.
Yes, exactly.
Dr. Kristen, I gotta ask, cause you know, I'm sure there's some moms and even some kids out there thinking, oh yeah, these bats sound really cool, but I don't know. I don't trust them. I'm afraid of them. And now, like, we've just been stuck in the house for like a month and a half because of some bat in another country. Why do I want bats in my backyard?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And with what's going on now, we're still learning where the virus came from, what actually caused the outbreak. And we think as right now that it wasn't a bat that directly gave it to a person. So that's as far as we know right now. And like I said, the benefits of bats far outweigh anything else because they're, like I said, there's 1,400 species of bats all around the world and they're all different. So having these bats around are very important. They're very important parts of the ecosystem and for, like I said, our wallets and for the things we eat. And basically our everyday lives. And they're cool to watch. I don't know if you've ever seen them, you know, flying around at night, just hunting the insects. Oh, they're so cool.
Oh,
I've
mentioned on my other podcast that my wife and I have a beautiful home right next to a wildlife sanctuary. We have 26 trees on our little property. And we go out at night in the pool and we just hear the bats and you see them flitter around. And I'm really proud of my beautiful wife because she was terrified of bats when we first got together. And then she learned about them and now she loves it. And she loves the fact that they eat the mosquitoes and we can go outside and have a cookout and go in the pool and we don't get eaten by mosquitoes. They get eaten by the bats.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a question. So if you have a kid who's really interested in bats like you, maybe wants to track them or count them or something, how do you, I mean, clearly you don't want it. Researchers do not get close to and, you know, bother bats. I mean, you catch them, but we don't want kids catching them. Can you recommend, like, what time of night do they go out, and how would they do this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we study bats, there's actually different ways that we can study bats. And one of those ways is through acoustics, which is basically their sounds. So we can listen for bats at night without getting close to them, without disturbing them or, you know, bothering them at night. And so the bats that are flying around where we live, they echolocate. So which means they use sonar, like dolphins do, to help them see at night. Now, bats are not blind. That is one of those myths. Blind as a bat. All bats can see. They all have eyes. But some of them also use echolocation to help them to navigate at night. And when they're using that echolocation, we can actually use special detectors that picks up that echolocation call and puts it into our detector, and we can identify what species or what kind of bat it is. And you can hear if they're feeding or not. They have what are called feeding buzzes. Yeah, as they get closer and closer.
It's like a whole different language. Cool.
It's cool. Yeah, as they get close to a prey insect, they're echolocating, like clicking, like. So that's like that constant slow echolocation is when they're navigating, when they're just flying around. When they detect something like a bug flying, they start echolocating faster and faster and faster to be able to form a better picture in their mind of where that insect is. So it goes like this. Yeah. So it's like
I've heard that sound, but I didn't know that that was a bat.
Yeah, and that's a feeding buzz, which means it's attacking an insect when they're doing that. So we study bats not only by, you know, hands-on things as bat biologists, that's what we're trained to do, but also via these echolocation calls. And the cool thing is there's actually some detectors that anybody can get on the internet that plug into your smartphone or your tablet, and then you can download this free app. And go around your yard and see what kind of bats are flying around. That's really cool.
So
that's a easy thing.
So each bat has its own language, its own sound.
Yeah. So that is something we are studying now. Like bat echolocation and vocalizations is a really, really cool field. And yes, different bat species have different calls, echolocation calls. And so that's how you can tell them apart. But they also socialize when they're in the roost or in a bat house or a cave together. They actually talk to each other also. And so we're actually learning about what those different calls mean. They like squeak, you know, they argue, they talk about food, you know, they have all these things that they talk about, and we're just starting to learn about that.
Have you guys put like little cameras in your bat houses so you can watch them too?
I actually have a video of one of the bat houses we put up here in Athens, in Georgia, where I am. There's a couple little bats up there. We have this little infrared camera, which means it can see in the dark. And, yeah, we can stick it up there and see the little bats. I do have some cool videos.
That's awesome. That really is. It's so cool. And one of the things, you guys are listening to the podcast. You can't see the passion and excitement that Dr. Kristen has. I mean, I've known her for a while now. She just loves bats. And I guess one of the things is that you love so much is that you know a lot about bats, but there's still so much to know.
Yeah, there is so much. There's always something to learn. We're just really hitting the tip of the iceberg with bats because they are kind of hard to study. You know, they're out at night. It's hard to find them sometimes. So it's kind of hard to study them. But when we do study them, we learn really cool things that can actually help us. So one of the things that people are studying is bats' immune systems. Because bats can live a really long time. These bats that can be, some of these are like the size of a mouse or a rat. So they're pretty small. But those bats can live up to 40 years or longer, which is a long time for such a small mammal.
That is.
Bat researchers are studying how can they live so long. And another really cool thing is they don't really get cancer. They live a long time, but as far as we can tell, they don't really get much cancer. And they also don't get sick a lot from different things. So how can they do that? And is there ways that we can study them and learn from them to help boost our own immune systems and help us live longer? It's fascinating.
I think we as scientists and engineers, a lot of them that we've had on our show, everybody talks about that what drives them is their passion and learning more. And, you know, any, you know, epic failures, to borrow Jed's saying here, that you have, all you do as a scientist is you just learn from that and you move on and you change and you go, oh, we didn't know that. But I have heard that about bats, that they have amazing immune systems, and that this could someday be very important to humans if we learn enough about it.
Yeah.
I think animals, we have so much we can learn from so many different animals.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's actually like a cane, an echolocating cane that for blind people that was developed based on bats echolocation. And it echolocates and it vibrates in the person's hand when there's something like an object in the way before they hit it. And that's based on bats echolocation. There's like some bats that pollinate or drink nectar from flowers. They have these really long tongues that have these like hair-like projections on their tongue. They kind of look like hairy tongues. And those tongues swell up when they drink the nectar, and it helps them get the nectar. But medical devices like devices for heart surgery are being developed based on bat tongues. So, like, I mean, there's just so many cool things that we can learn. And because bats are everywhere, like, everybody can see them. Everyone can learn from bats, even if you're just out in your own backyard, which I think is really neat.
Oh, yeah.
What's one of the most surprising things that you learned about bats?
I think just the diversity of bats. There's, like I said, over 1,400 species all around the world, and they range in size. The smallest bat is the bumblebee bat, which is smaller than your thumb tip, just the tip of your thumb, and it weighs less than a penny.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's that small. Then there's all the way to one of the biggest bats in the world, which is one of the flying fox species that has a wingspan of up to 6 feet. So that's taller than I am. Like,
okay, that might scare me, though.
I
don't know if I want to see a 6 foot bat.
No, the cool thing about them is those ones only eat fruit. Those are some of the fruit bats. So those are the ones that are pollinating, and they're dispersing seeds and helping regrow.
Do those live?
They live, unfortunately, not in the U.S., but they live in Australia. There's some in Africa, Asia. So, yeah. Kind of that part of the world, but they're fascinating.
Have you seen one of those?
I have. I was actually in Australia for a year studying bats after college, and yeah, I got to see them, and they're beautiful.
Do you have a picture of you with one? Because we need to post it on our website.
I don't have one because they're high up in the trees, so it's like hard to see. But I do have pictures of them. They're really cool.
Well, we'll have to post, we will post a picture of that bat on the website so that everyone can see it, because I just have to see how these.
Oh, they're so cool. They're flying foxes. So there's different types of flying foxes, but they look like foxes. And people call them on social media, hashtag sky puppies, because they look like puppies that fly in the sky. They're really cute.
Oh my God. But they're really bats.
They're really bats. Yeah. That's the amazing thing, is there's so many types of bats all around the world. They're different colors. There's a bat that looks like a badger. It's black and white. There's another one in the U.S., a spotted bat that looks like a cow. It's also black and white. It has huge ears. There's just like, it's incredible. If you just Google like cool bats, you'll get tons of cool pictures.
I will be doing that right after the show. Now I have to see all these things.
Now, Dr. Kristen, do you have a favorite bat?
Oh, that's a hard one. I actually really love the one that I am working with right now. It's the Mexican long-nosed bat. They are one of the pollinating bats. So they live in the U.S., Southwest, and in Mexico. And they pollinate agave plants, which we use to make tequila and mezcal. So we like having them around. But I really love them because they eat nectar, and I have a huge sweet tooth. I love candy, and I love lots of sugar. So I really relate to them on that level. But also when they're eating the nectar from the flowers, they're kind of clumsy. They're not the most graceful bat. And so I'm also pretty clumsy and not very graceful. So I relate to them too in that way. So, pretty cute.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Well, this is cool. Dr. Kristen, one of the things we love to do here on Solve It is to challenge our listeners. We love to be totally interactive. So do you have something you can challenge our listeners with?
I do. I think it would be really cool if you all could draw a bat. So whatever kind of bat you want, like I said, just Google cool bats. And you'll find lots of different kinds of bats. So draw a bat. And then draw something, things that it might need to live. Mm-hmm. So we talked about insects. Some bats eat insects. Some bats eat fruit. Some bats eat nectar. So you could draw some things that they would eat. And then also, where do they live? And we talked about that too. They live in trees, houses, bat houses, caves. So draw your own bat and your own bat habitat. And yeah. I would love to see what y'all come up with.
So once you guys do that, then take a picture of it and send it to us or tag us on Twitter or on Instagram. And we will make sure that we tag Dr. Kristen so she can take a look at them too. Because we would like to see what kind of bats you choose to, I might do one on
flying foxes. So there's lots of different
foxes.
Kinds. Yeah, a flying fox.
I might do one of those. Which cool. Bat are you going to choose, Jed?
I think the cow. Yeah. You know,
the spotted bat.
Yeah, and maybe give it different colors because I'm a tie dye dye. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, there's also one of my favorite ones.
Cow looking bat. I want to see like this that. Picture, Jed.
I like that. There's another one called the Chapin's bat, and it has the males have a mohawk, so you could draw. I mean, literally, bats that can have mohawks. I mean, how cool is that?
That's usually only something you see in the cartoons. So, I mean, it's cool that it's actually an animal in real life.
It's for real, yeah. Just Google bat mohawk and you'll find it.
You know what I think is really cool is that, you know, you see all these really wild and imaginative things on cartoons and everything. And you go, wow, that person who created that is so creative. But in reality, nature is so much more creative and crazy and wild.
Yeah, it really is. We can't really beat it. I mean, if we're mimicking it to you know, make things like medical devices, and I mean, nature already has a lot of the answers.
Yes.
Wow. Exactly. Who would have thunk it? The best way to deal with the earth is like use the manual. Do what the earth does. follow the, learn from the earth.
Exactly.
Nope. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Kristen. I have learned tons about bats I didn't know.
I
think our listeners have enjoyed learning too. So
yeah, this has been great. I think bats are super cool. And nowadays there's, for building bat houses, I mean, there's bat house kits online that you can buy that are super easy to put together. You know, I've helped kids as young as like 5 put these bat houses together. There's so much cool stuff on the internet about bats, and a lot of good resources. So thanks for having me. I'm glad I could help.
Thanks for being on Solve It.
That was such a cool episode.
It was so cool. And I want to now build a bat house. Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be awesome. Like I said, we have bats in our backyard. They eat all the mosquitoes. It's so cool watching them flitter around. They fly like crazy. The bats are so cool.
They are. And there's some people that might be afraid of them, but they don't bother humans. And as you said, they help with the ecology and the ecosystem. So they're very important creatures. So to learn more about bats and about Dr. Kristen, make sure you go to our website, solveitforkids.com, click on the episode link, and then scroll down so you can learn all about Dr. Kristen. You can see a video or two that she's made of working with bats, and then you can do her challenge.
Excellent. And can kids win something if they go to solveforkids.com?
If they do the challenge and they leave us a comment on our website or tag us on our Twitter or Instagram, which is @KidsSolve, they can be entered to win a free book about bats.
Awesome. Jennifer, as always, this has been such a blast. We'll see everybody next week on
Solve It for Kids.